Live from KCUR News, this is Casey Currents on Central Standard, reporting news and culture in Kansas City's diverse communities and beyond. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Love it or hate it, cell phones are becoming more and more common at entertainment events like concerts, sports games, and movies.
Yeah, I think there's some people that just want to slap it out of someone's hands, like put the damn thing down and enjoy the moment.
Now, some venues, instead of telling you to power down, are encouraging live audiences to connect to performances with their phones. On today's Casey Currents, we discuss the changing role of cell phones in live entertainment. Plus, hear the story of a little-known Kansas City boxer who won almost as many fights as Muhammad Ali.
You know, he didn't say much. He was a really calm guy, but you put a pair of gloves on him, and, you know, he would just, you know, he would just dominate.
It's Casey Currents. Listen up just after this news. Welcome to Casey Currents. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. We use stories and sound to take you to neighborhoods around the region. And now we're live, so you can call in and share your thoughts on some of the big issues in our community. We have a love-hate relationship with our phones. How annoying is it when people at a concert or a sporting event spend more time texting or videotaping than they do just experiencing the show or game? But at the same time, have you ever just wanted to share the experience of being at an amazing show or needed to turn on the phone for just a second to see if the babysitter texted? Today on Casey Currents, we're exploring how entertainment venues are starting to adjust to our desire to connect. Feel free to connect with us by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or going to KCUR's Facebook page. But first, to get a sense of how people are using their phones at rock shows, we sent Esther Honig to the Record Bar on Tuesday night.
Yes, thank you.
It's a weeknight, so it's a smaller crowd than usual at the Record Bar. Probably 30 or 40 people, mostly local musicians, music enthusiasts, and promoters. The headliner tonight is the Melismatics, a touring band from Minneapolis. They're not that well known, but a few fans are recording videos, snapping photos, and tweeting. The blue glare reflects on their faces. In between sets, I ask audience members what they think about mobile phone usage at concerts. One of the people I talked to, Lazarus Potter, actually wrote a book on the subject called Texticate.
People are abusing the privilege of having a smartphone in their pocket. You're at a concert to see a concert. Why are you on your phone texting or checking Facebook or doing anything else? You should be looking at the concert. You should be enjoying the moment.
My name's Dustin Mott. I'm the drummer of The Lucky. It's kind of flattering, to be honest. You know, they want to remember this moment. As an audience member, and if I like something I hear audio-wise, you know, I may take a little video and send it to somebody, be like, hey, guess what you missed out on tonight?
My name is Nick Flynn. I spent the last 20 years in the music industry. I used to watch a lot of bands at festivals from stage, and you'd look out and you'd see 10,000 people and 8,000 of them holding up their cell phone.
Oh, I find it quite annoying, actually. You're there for the performance, and it doesn't seem that they're actually listening to the artist as much as they are recording it for their Facebook and their Twitter things. Basically, they're spending more time with their device than with their friends and with the performers.
I make a point personally of when I'm watching a band, I do not ever take my phone out or answer. If I'm up front, if I'm sitting at a table away, yes, but if I'm up front and standing and watching a band, I won't.
My name is Sarah. Sarah Stevens.
I'm a very, very new musician. I've only learned, picked up a guitar for the first time about 2.5 years ago. You're putting a lot of yourself and your emotion into music because it is an art, and you're hoping to connect with an audience member, and if they are on their mobile device, it's obvious you're not connecting with them.
I'll take a couple pictures for sure because I want to definitely make sure, like, yo, I enjoyed the time, I had a good time. If it's somebody I know, if it's a client of mine, I'll definitely tweet about it. If it's somebody I'm trying to promote, I definitely want to tweet about it. I want to Facebook about it, Instagram, whatever. My name is RL. I think it's almost less distracting than somebody being totally obnoxiously loud.
I've seen someone kick a phone once. It was pretty awkward. He was having a bad day. He was being recorded, and he kicked the phone out of the guy's hand, and it came off as really lame. But I don't care. I think if someone's recording you, that's awesome. That means someone's giving a shit, you know, to watch your stupid band and record it. Before you get real pissed, they could be tweeting about you. They could be talking about how awesome you are. So you just gotta chill out.
That's Isaiah Radke, bass player for the band Radke. So while some audience members found mobile phone usage distracting, a lot of musicians see them as a necessary tool for promoting their bands. Earlier today, Steve Tulipana said that's true for the venue too. Twitter can help build an audience in just a few hours.
I've seen that where a show was maybe not doing so well early in the evening and people are like, where are you, where are you? And it build, you know, halfway through the show. I think it sometimes can help generate awareness that something's going on that people should come check out.
Tulipana says some of the bands he books, especially the more successful ones, hate it. They might be concerned about copyright, or that if they have too much material on YouTube, record companies won't want to sign them. Or they might just want to hide the fact that they're really bad live. Tulipana thinks it's a little silly sometimes when everyone is recording a big hit that's already on the radio. But he doesn't stop people from doing it.
To be honest, I mean, I'm not like 100% against it. I'm not like, you know, put your damn phone down.
Tulipana says this is just how concerts are these days, especially for the younger generations.
They've grown up experiencing social events in a different way, you know, where you document everything. Everything's documented, whether it's a video clip or a blog or a Yelp review, or every single thing is documented. And I think it's just the way of the future, I guess, or the way of now.
And as Tulipana points out, kids aren't waving lighters at concerts anymore. Mobile phones are here to stay. So it's up to venues and the artists to figure out how to take advantage of them. For Casey Currents, I'm Esther Honig.
And it just so happens that a couple of venues in Kansas City have been pioneering the integration of audience cell phones into the entertainment experience. We're back in the studio now with some people who've been thinking a lot about this, and we welcome your calls about whether cell phones enhance or detract from the concert experience or a sports game or a concert. Call us at 816-235-2888 or tweet us at Casey Currents. Zane Pasha of Sporting Innovations. He's the product manager for Sporting KC Games. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
When you hear people talking about phones at concerts, I wonder how much you hear a connection to how people are using phones during sports games.
You hear it quite a bit, actually, because I think, like you probably heard before, phones are here to stay, right? And especially the younger generations, the millennials, they know nothing else except for smartphones. That's their way to connect. So you hear it a lot, actually.
And how did you get into this field of designing apps for or just working with apps for sporting events?
Well, so there was a genesis a couple years ago of the smartphone and massive adoption and that increasing rate of adoption happening. At sports, you didn't see that as often as you may have seen it at, you know, consumer products or other types of entertainment. But at some point, sports organizations realized that it's time that we also came into the 21st century, because they were losing fans to the TV. Competition with the couch is a very common term there. So there was an opportunity there to not only, you know, start using mobile applications to deliver information to fans about, you know, about the team, about the events, about how they're performing, but also to potentially enrich those experiences that those fans could have at a venue. And that could become a value proposition to those fans to come to that, to a sports venue. So that's really how this opportunity came about.
Yeah. Everybody's trying to get people out of the house and into the venue, right, as opposed to just staying at home and doing all of this. Do people get annoyed at fellow sports fans in the same way? I mean, it seems like maybe it's not as controversial because sports games are kind of loud places as it is.
That actually hits the nail right on the head there, because sports events are by nature very loud, very collaborative. You've got a group of people, particularly for the home team, that are there that are unified around one particular entity, which is the sports team, right? Chiefs. We go there for the Chiefs because we're all loyal Chiefs fans. So it's okay there. And it actually, that's the reason there's an opportunity to use a mobile device to actually enrich that game experience, not to detract from it.
So, and you feel like you're not hearing as many people maybe complaining as they do in concerts or movies, which probably is the biggest complaint that you'd think, why would somebody need to use their phone?
What we see actually is actually a pretty high adoption of the technology, particularly at Sporting Park. And you know, about 50% of our fan base has a mobile device and at Sporting Park, and they do engage with the mobile applications as a way to enrich their game experience. Very simple example is, you know, there's a replay feature that's available on our product that's used at Sporting Kansas City, and fans can actually take a play that happened on the field and actually review it in case there was a call that they were like, oh, maybe this is the wrong call. But now not only can they review it and take some power into their own hands, but then they can also create a conversation around it with the people that are around them, right? That's a pretty fantastic way technology can actually enhance a fan experience.
Yeah. Now, I want to bring in Brent Scholes, a group creative director at VML, a local digital marketing and advertising agency. Brent's worked with the Folly Theater in an experiment to integrate phones in the audience experience during a performance. Thank you for joining us, Brent.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, how did you get involved in this stuff?
Well, the Folly is a pro bono client of VML, and they're the oldest theater in Kansas City, 113 years. Attendance had been, you know, lacking a little bit in their shows, and so they were looking for innovative, creative ways to bring a younger audience into the theater. And we came up with the idea that, you know, this crowd that we just talked about, who are completely attached to their phones, will not put them down. How can we use that as a way to maybe connect them to the show rather than prohibit the show? Because as you know, like you mentioned earlier, you're at a movie theater, you're at another event like that, and you're just told, turn your phone off, turn your phone off. Well, what if you were told to turn it on? What would happen? And so we came up with a way that it helps you connect with and then even potentially direct the show.
And what was the show, and when was it?
It was in August. It was a burlesque show with a group called the New Century Follies. We started with the Folly Theater with the general idea, and they were the ones who suggested that we partner with the burlesque group because the show really lent itself to that. It's not a linear format, you know, where, you know, something here happens, and we weren't ready for the audience to, like, dictate whether the heroine lives or dies or something like that. It's a variety act, so it lent itself to coming up with the concept.
And what were some of the things that people used their phones for during the performance?
Sure. There was several voting scenarios. So they could vote on, you know, I want this person to wear red or white when it's time for her performance. Or they could vote for what song the band is going to play when the curtain comes down. They could vote for what prop somebody was going to use. And then beyond voting, there was several little miniature games and interactions that we made that were in the 1920s burlesque genre and had an influence on the stage, too, that were really fun.
How so?
So one of my favorites was a peep show. And what was happening on stage is there was a man and a woman dancing. It was Charlie Chaplin. And the girl was the silhouette behind a big screen. And that's what we learned when we did our research and talked to the dancers. That back in the vaudeville era, peep shows were actually coin-operated. Hmm. You had to feed money to keep it going. So on stage, they're beckoning for money, and in the audience, your app, the prompt comes up, and it tells you, put in money to keep the show going. And there was a little game that we designed where the audience would use their fingers to swipe coins into a bucket. Huh. And when the money added up, then they continued the show. So it was real fun interaction. And then another one was a burlesque name generator. And you got to do some inputs, like I'm a tease, or I'm an exhibitionist, or I'm more masculine, or I'm more feminine. And we would suggest stage names with fun random pairings because these people have the greatest names. They're like Moxie Dynamite, Annie Cherry, you know, just real fun names. So that was another fun interaction too.
And what did you find? Like how did it work for the Folly and for the audience?
Everybody who came and had the app had a great time. They were incredibly engaged from start to finish. I mean, if there was a complaint, it was that their battery was drained at the end because they were doing this so much. And we treated the people who came there kind of as our media plan because there was no paid media to advertise the event or follow up. So we used the people coming to let their social networks know what they were doing. So every opportunity that we – or every interaction that we made was shareable through Facebook and Twitter, and buzz just really built that night. That was really fun.
We have a call here from Michael in Kansas City. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Sylvia. It's a really great conversation. I teach communications at UMKC, and I recently went to a concert in St. Louis with my brother, and they asked us to post to social media during a symphony concert at the concert hall in St. Louis.
Huh.
So it was a regular concert, you know, how everyone sits quietly with their hands folded, and they didn't say that. They said, post and tweet and do whatever you want to do. My comment really is that we need to learn more about how this works. You know, if you go back in history, the groundlings at the Shakespeare Theater, you know, you'd think that the theater would be quiet and everybody would be listening, but actually it was boisterous and people were chatting and yelling at each other. And so, I mean, you know, we have to kind of sort of figure out, you know, how this works. We may have to have nights where people are using social media at the theater or at the symphony, and we have a little notation on the program. This is or smoking sections. You know, we used to have smoking sections. Maybe we have a tweeting section where all the social media people are up in the balcony and they're having a good time with their social media. I think there are lots of cool things that we can experiment with this, but we have to learn how to use it appropriately. For example, one other comment we need to touch on, I'm sure you will, is the safety issue. You know, people need to learn to turn off their social media in certain circumstances. They need to understand how to relax by turning off their social media. So those are just some of the issues that I want to throw out there, and I'm really, really happy that you guys are talking about this. This is, I think, something we're going to need to keep talking about over the next couple of years.
Interesting. Well, you introduced some interesting ideas, Michael, and I see you nodding, Zane, about the idea that this goes back. People interacting with the performance goes way back, and maybe it's only in recent years that we've thought we need to sit quietly and watch and just enjoy the experience. What are your thoughts about that?
So I think that actually touches right on the point of how do you use technology to enrich or enhance the experience, and there's two aspects to it. One is make it so enriched that people want to show up at the venue, right? And technology is a more or less a tool. I think what Brent was talking about was, you know, they created structures that actually allowed the audience to control the show and direct the show. That's power, and that's power that's enabled by technology. Similarly, at sporting events, right, many fans, you know, you'll have a lot of frustrations when there's a bad call. You hear it all the time, whether it's on TV. You can now empower fans to participate in the event and have a little bit more control or a little bit more understanding about what's going on in the field, whether it's through a replay, whether it's through providing statistics. And it might also be about delivering them value that they may not see at home. For example, if I come to a venue and you know some things about me, that I like to eat hot dogs or I like to eat French fries, when they show up, give them an experience or an opportunity to go get a free hot dog or a free French fries because that particular person likes it. For a fan, that's compelling. It's almost like a VIP treatment for him because we know enough about you as a fan. So those are the opportunities as well to enrich that fan experience there.
Well, you're listening to Casey Currents on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Just in a few minutes, we're going to hear from the president. He's speaking this morning. If you can stay with KCUR for continued coverage, we're going to continue this conversation for now and till the end of the hour, but with an interruption for the president when he does speak, probably around 10:40. We're talking right now about the use of smartphones at sports events and other entertainment venues. They're starting to encourage you to turn your phones on. Here with us are Zane Pasha of Sporting Innovations and Brent Scholes, Group Creative Director at VML. And Brent, I'm wondering, how is this experiment you did at the Folly Theater applicable to maybe more conventional concerts, music concerts, or you know, movies, which is the hardest to imagine, although, you know, the caller mentioned people having a texting or social media row, and I know there are some movie theaters experimenting with that, having maybe the row in the back be the texting social media row, so people who are into that can do it and hopefully not bother other people.
Yeah, I think you talked about three different potential scenarios there. You know, in concerts, it's really important to the band, to the artist. They put a lot of craft into what their set list is going to be. They have a lot of control that night. But there's certainly times where they would welcome audience choice. So if it's for an encore, what song they could play. Maybe if they have two versions of a solo that everybody knows, which one do you want us to play? That's what we did in our show is we let them choose. We presented them two options. We didn't just open it up to say whatever song you want to hear. It's like between choice A and choice B. So in a music scenario, I could see that happening. You said movie theaters. I know that Disney is getting ready to experiment. They're bringing back Little Mermaid, and they're going to actually have a similar thing where you can download an app and the audience can bring an iPad or something and interact with the movie. I think there's some polls and some questions and geared towards youth. As far as live theater, you know, performance art, I think the possibilities are endless. I made the mention earlier that we chose not to do a linear show as a variety act, But it would be really fun to do a linear show where it's choose your own adventure and the audience is kind of driving what happens that night, and it could be a different story night after night.
Now, I have to state, there are a lot of people who do go to live entertainment or a sports event to escape from screens. A lot of us look at screens all day long, and when we have fun, we don't want to be looking at a screen. Are we taking away some options, like the replays at sporting games, from those people who don't want to look at the screen?
That's a fantastic question, and that's a question that you hear a lot. And there's certainly initially that's a thought that comes into a lot of people's minds. But the way in which you have to look at the way technology rolls into a sporting experience is in stages, right? There are discrete stages to the way we think about mobile experiences. There's a pregame, during game, and a postgame. That during game moment is actually sacred, right? It's important because, yes, the core reason that a fan is at a venue is so that they can watch the team or the actors on the field. Right? But that's not to say that things like a replay or a value-added coupon, something like that, is a distraction. Because there are many, many times when fans may feel like they can't get up out of their seat to do anything else because they might miss on the action. But now that replay becomes an opportunity for them to not actually maybe miss out on the action. Or if they walked up, they're not worried as much about seeing it. They can now watch that same player that took place from six different angles and angles that they didn't see. Other things are, some people may have, you know, different seats in larger venues. You see not all seats are created equal. But things like live video streaming from 8 or 10 camera angles now gives those fans access to views that they may never otherwise see. But they're still watching the game. They're still engaging with the game. It's just enriching that experience for them. And you can enable that, enable them to be actually more involved with the game and actually come back to the venue because they had a better experience, that they didn't miss something, right?
Do people have to pay for the app at Sporting?
Nope, it's available. It's available to the fans for free, and it's part of the value proposition is that, you know, they come to the venue, they get access to more things. That's why we think fans are compelled to come to Sporting Park, is because they get things that they don't get otherwise when they're watching on TV or other such places.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Brent, about you know, people who just don't want to look at screens?
You know, a funny thing is, the first model when we were trying to come up with how to do ours, because, again, it's very important to the performers that your eyes are on the stage. So if we do this, we had to figure out the cadence. How often do you look at your screen so you don't detract from the show and you enjoy it? And our model was VH1, pop-up video. Hmm. You remember the days where you could watch a music video, so you're into the artist and you're soaking in the performance. But every once in a while, there'd be a little thing that you could look at and would actually enhance. You'd learn a little bit about the dancer, about the concept, about the band. And so we took that as our initial model for how often something should happen and how it should add to, not detract from, what you're experiencing.
And how often was that?
We limited ourselves to one per act. And that was a big discovery early on with the band or with the dancers. And part of that was just driven by, you know, what I just talked about, not looking at your screen too much, and part of it was driven by, we need to have enough space if you vote, if you interact with something, that we can actually look at the results and make the impact on stage. If it's happening too rapid fire, it's just going to be a big cluster. So it was one per act, and it was the right amount. And sometimes in between, they have a big MC who comes on and engages the audience in between acts. That was also a natural time to have a fun interaction there.
And it's interesting because for actors and performers, musicians, depending on the size of the venue, that audience connection, that eye to eye, just knowing that people are looking at you when you're performing for them is pretty important, as one of the musicians pointed out in our piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we wanted to reward the actors too. We didn't want them to feel like they were performing for phones and people. We wanted them to enjoy it as well. And so they've definitely felt the energy of input, not knowing what costume am I going to wear, what prop am I going to wear. But we also did one engagement where we thought of, you know, when you go to a concert and everybody just lights their lighter during a ballad or something like that. We did a virtual spotlight where people would turn their spotlight on and hold the phone towards the stage. And we built in this like wave of colors that were changing. And the dancers didn't tell the performer that was going to happen. So in the moment, she just felt this on stage, this moment where the whole audience lifted up their phones. And it was really powerful. So it was really cool to provide that for her.
She didn't freak out.
She didn't freak out. She loved it. It was great.
Interesting. Are there ways that sporting is using, like, people using the lights on their phones in some ways? We mentioned in the piece that, you know, nowadays people at concerts hold up their phones instead of lighters, but I wonder.
So at Sporting Park, we don't have something like that, but there are other clients and people we've worked with that we know they're doing that. I can't mention them right now, but there are opportunities like that that we're looking at sports venues across the globe, not just in Kansas City, but other places.
Steve Tulipana at the Record Bar told us that there's an app that you can download for music festivals, like the Midwest Music Festival, where people can use their phones to create a light show, kind of similarly for events. But I wonder what kind of technical capacity is necessary in a theater to have people be using wireless so much. And I know that the stadium for Sporting was very kind of famously designed for this technology because it was just built when this technology already existed, which is very different from the Folly. How was it technically designed for this?
So there's two aspects to it. Our view on mobile experiences is that you shouldn't have to be dependent on a Wi-Fi connection to get access to some of this content, because not every location or venue has Wi-Fi. In sports, you are seeing a movement now towards new venues having wireless in some form, shape, or form. At Sporting Park, we've got what's called high density Wi-Fi, and it was the second such installation in the country, and the other one being the Dallas Cowboys at their venue, and it's got some of the largest amount of fiber definitely in this area and definitely across sports venues across the country. And so that supports high throughput, high bandwidth type activities like video, like inner engagement, like sharing. We do quite a bit of data and disproportionately large amounts of data for a venue of our size. And all of that is lives on a backbone of a strong Wi-Fi ecosystem. But again, we believe that it shouldn't just be dependent on having a strong Wi-Fi connection, because some of that infrastructure may be expensive. It's that you should have access to that on your normal data plans and things of that nature.
And
as well.
Does that mean that you have to design apps that don't
So the way that we've done it is that our feature set on and again, we stay away from the term apps. It's more about kind of the overall experience as you have on a mobile device, and so it does not require you to have Wi-Fi. The video bandwidth is something that may require Wi-Fi, but there are other aspects of the mobile experience that do not require that type of connectivity. So.
Sports fans, we want to hear from you. Can phone apps enhance your viewing experience at the stadium, or are they a distraction? Same for music fans, movie fans. Call in with your thoughts and questions at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can email us at kccurrents@kcur.org. Brent Scholes, what about at the Folly Theater? As you mentioned, 113 years old, obviously not designed for, cell phone interaction.
Yeah, 113 years old. They definitely didn't have high-density Wi-Fi or hi-fi or even lo-fi back then. It was a problem we had to deal with early and we had to think about. And what we chose to do was to... One, we made a decision early on that we did want an app. We thought an app would prevent the best or give the best experience for the audience between some of the graphics we wanted to do, some of the animations and so on. So we chose that over like a mobile site type experience. And two, yes, we knew that just the location downtown, the walls and so on, we couldn't rely on just cellular network. So we chose to invest, and we worked with a third party who brought in a truck that night and wired the place for this one night so people could have access to Wi-Fi. So then an interesting dilemma popped up when we realized if the audience can impact the show through voting and it's a free app and we're going to be advertising or we're going to be marketing this ahead of time, potentially people could have the app and influence the show even if they're not there. They could vote on something when that vote comes up, but they're not in the seats. So we wanted to prevent that. And we realized then that we needed to have like a fun, easy login at the beginning. So that night, we had volunteers in the lobby who were handing out cards, making sure people had the app on their phones. It was all up to date. They logged them in on the spot, and then we had the MC at the beginning do that. So everybody was set. Only the people who were there that night could influence the show, and it was lightning quick for everybody.
Huh, interesting. Now, I wonder about other types of venues and just other entertainment fields. What are you hearing about what's happening in terms of phone app integration? Do you look to other fields, Zane?
Absolutely. There's actually a lot of motivation that you can get in sports from the consumer products industry. So this is not a venue specifically, but you could consider a retail store a venue. You see a lot of, you know, stores and malls now trying to incorporate geolocation. So you show up in near the store, you get some access to it. That relies on your phone's location services, and that relies on your phone's data connection to get you that. So that's an interesting and compelling value add. So we think that certainly location is important, but it's not the most efficient way to provide value to a person. Just because I'm walking next to a particular store doesn't mean I'm actually looking to go to that particular store. So we actually think that there are some influences and some inspiration we can derive. And then in sports context, we can actually use additional sources of data, like, you know, your buying habits and your purchasing behavior, to deliver additional, you know, more specifically, more efficiently targeted kind of value added. So that's one area that we do look to is consumer products, because they've done a lot of good work in that field. From a concert perspective, an entertainment perspective, there are some real-world structures that take place. I think a great example is the Sprint Center. They have a nice exclusive sections for certain types of people who are maybe related to a sponsor of theirs. And so they have a very much a physical structure. You know, you show your card if it's a bank, and you get access to an area. We think that you can bring that digital into the sports world, where your mobile device, your mobile experience can be a delivery mechanism for that, and it's very much tailored to who you are, right? So you may be a Sprint customer, but this person may be a Verizon customer, and you can flex what they get based on who they are and what their relationship is.
Brent, is there anything you're looking to at VML? You do interactive marketing.
Yeah, a lot of the same stuff. I'd echo that. You know, for the particular thing that we did, there wasn't really any sort of a retail concession component to it. You could run out and buy a beer or a glass of wine, and that was it. So there's, I think what he alluded to, if you're at a place that has a lot more concession retail opportunities, partner opportunities, then that lends itself to digital wallet, location, those sorts of scenarios. But again, in an entertainment field, I think it's really led by the people on the stage who are determining how open and integrated they want to be with the audience.
And really quickly, what about privacy issues? Zane, people might not be wary about giving up their information when they download an app.
Absolutely. And that's something that's, you know, you struggle with, because the data that the fans provide ultimately allows us to deliver a deeper and richer experience for those fans. But at the same time, it's a chicken or the egg problem, where how do you initially let the fan know that it's worthwhile for them to provide that data? The paradigm we've taken is that we need to give the fan a tease or a preview, and that can be done in many different ways, but that there is some value that they're driving. The other aspect of that is the more boring aspect, which is how do you secure and notify the fan that you're securing that data? With things like the cloud now, there's still questions about security, but we take that very seriously, and that's what you got to do with mobile.
And that's Zane Pasha, product manager at Sporting Innovations. We're also talking to Brent Scholes, group creative director at VML.